नमो भगवते वसुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वसुदेवाय। We're reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 13. Description of the descendants of Dhruva Maharaj. Starting this chapter, text 1, it says it's a pretty short chapter actually. Suta Uvacha Nishamya Kosharavina Upavarnittam Dhruvasya Vaikuntapada Adhirohanam Prarudha Bhavo Bhagavati Arokshaje Prashtum Punastam Vidurah Pachakrame Suta Uvacha Nishamya Kosha Ravino Pavarnitam Dhruvasya Vaikuntha Padadi Rohanam Prarudha Bhavo Bhagavatya Rokshaje Prashtum Punastam Virurappa Chakrame Suta Uvacha Nishamya Kausha Ravino Pavarnitam Dhruvasya Vaikuntha Padadi Rohanam Prarudha Bhavo Bhagavatya Rokshaje Prashtum Punastam Virurappa Chakrame Suta Uvacha Nishamya Kausha Ravino Pavarnitam Dhruvasya Vaikuntha Padadi Rohanam Prarudha Bhavo Bhagavatya Rokshaje Prashtum Punastam Vidura Prachakrame Chakrame
Suta Uvacha
Suta Uvacha
Nishamya Kosha Ravino Pavarnitam
Nishamya Kosha Ravino Pavarnitam
Dhruvasya Vaikuntha Padadi Rohanam
Dhruvasya Vaikuntha Padadi Rohanam
Prarudha Bhavo Bhagavati Adam Sajay
Rudabhavo Bhagavati Aroksaje Rastum Rappo Chakrame Suta Uvacha Astum punastam vidura pachakrame Rastum punastam vidura prachakrame Suta uvacha Ishamya kausha ravinno bhavarnitam Dhruvasya vaikuntha padari rohanam That'll be okay. Rastum punastam vidura pachakrame Suta uvacha Suta Goswami said Nishamya after hearing Kosha Ravina by the sage Maitreya Upavarnatam described Dhruvasya of Maharaj Dhruva Vaikuntapada to the abode of Vishnu Adhirohanam ascent Prarudha increase increased there's even in Bhavaha devotional emotion Bhagavati unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead Arokshaje who is beyond the reach of direct perception Prashtum to inquire Punaha again Tam unto Maitreya Viduraha Vidura Prachakrame attempted. Translation. Suta Goswami, continuing to speak to all the rishis headed by Shomaka, said, after hearing Maitreya Rishi describe Dhruva Maharaja's ascent to Lord Vishnu's abode, Vidura became very much enlightened in devotional emotion, and he inquired from Maitreya as follows. Srila Prabhupada's purport. As evidenced in the topics between Vidura and Maitreya, the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the devotees are so fascinating that neither the devotee who is describing them nor the devotee who is hearing is at all fatigued by the inquiries and answers. Transcendental subject matter is so nice that no one becomes tired of hearing or speaking. Others who are not devotees may think, how can people devote so much time simply to talks of God? But devotees are never satisfied or satiated in hearing and speaking about the Supreme Personality of Godhead or about His devotees. The more they hear and talk, the more they become enthusiastic to hear. The chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra is simply the repetition of three words, Hare, Krishna, and Rama. But still, devotees can go on chanting this Hare Krishna mantra 24 hours a day without feeling fatigued. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Parastaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Sarasate Deve Gauravari Pacharane Nibhisesha Shunyavari Paschachare Satarane Oma Gyanam Timurandasya Garanjana Shalakaya Chaksuru Militam Jainam Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vanchakalpatubhyascha Kripasindubhyeva Chapatitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So the two Sanskrit words Sutta Uvacha are translated by Prabhupada to remind us Sutta Goswami continuing to speak to all the rishis headed by Shaunaka said. In other words, because our Bhagavatam is a record of conversations nested within conversations. And the outer conversation is this one, Sutta, talking to the sages at Naimisharanya Forest. Shaunaka is their spokesperson. And what is he telling? He's telling the conversation that took place when Shukadeva Goswami spoke to Maharaj Parikshit, who is now telling of a conversation between Maitreya Rishi and Vidura. Where you have these nested. We're back to the outside conversation. So all these people sitting and talking about Krishna, big crowds. The inside one, Maitreya and Vidura, there were just a couple of them. There was no crowds as far as we know. But then when Naimisharanya Forest, huge numbers of sages, and also huge numbers of people were hearing. When Shukadeva spoke to Maharaj Parikshit. So all these people are hearing. And here this verse says that the hearing about Dhruva's extraordinary ascent to Vishnupada, the abode of Vishnu, the result was in Vidura, Praruddha Bhava Bhagavati Aroksaje, his feeling, bhava, his devotional ecstasy toward Krishna increased. And he'd heard this whole narration now, and you can see from this, you'll see from his inquiries, he's full of questions, he wants to know more. In other words, he so much relished what Maitreya was saying that he wanted to hear more and more and more, so he just kept on asking questions. So Prabhupada talks about this feature of transcendental literature where there is a enthusiasm in both the speaker and the hearer that keeps both of them so enlivened that there is no end to their activities of these things. This is characteristic of advanced devotee, because somebody will, Prabhupada announces here that people can hear and chant without feeling fatigue. This seems counterfactual to us because I remember even my so many devotees that I remember we had one guy in our temple, you know, he was going to read Prabhupada's books, and he would sit down and he'd put down a little rug. And he'd take a book stand, put it down, and put the book, and then he put little pictures all around him. He lights some incense. You sit down and... And I remember when I was just a new temple president, devotees all wanted to have a certain period of the time where they could all read. So we made a certain period of the time where there'd be 1 hour for everybody to just read. So I went around the temple and see, and everybody was sleeping. So I said, okay, you can't read in your rooms now. Everybody has to come to the temple room and we'll do it here, like a study hall under supervision, you know. And that's where I noticed it. It didn't help. And so Prabhupada said once, he said, what is it about my books that puts my disciples to sleep? He noticed this. And even, I remember in Mayapur, in the early days when we had the festival and Prabhupada was there, in the old temple room, the Prabhupada, there was this big vyasasana for Prabhupada. And there was a kind of, it was marble. And then there was a marble railing, fence before that, and there was an area around Prabhupada's vyasasana, and all the GBCs and the sannyasis used to sit there, which was kind of unfortunate because all of us in the audience, not only were we watching Prabhupada, we could watch all our leaders, and so Prabhupada is giving class, and one by one, you know, it was like really embarrassing. Brahmananda was always the first to go, but it turned out he had sleep apnea, so he was always sleep deprived anyway, so he had an excuse. I don't think that everyone did. So this seems to us that these statements of Srila Prabhupada are not the case, but it's and the how can people devote so much time to this? And but what Prabhupada is talking about will be evidence in devotees who have reached a certain level of advancement. In the sequence of stages leading up to prema that are described in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, first of all, there's Shraddha. Some preliminary faith or confidence, and then bhajana kriya under the direction of a spiritual master. This means initiation and sadhu sangha comes next, or rather. Then there you one associates with devotees, and then out of that one becomes committed to the practice of Krishna consciousness under direction. This is called bhajana kriya. Then there should follow anartha nivritti. There should be a purgation, a purification of dirty things and the unwanted things in the hearts that are all obstacles to devotional service. These are the anartha, unwanted things. Not only sins, sinful desires, material desires, even not even necessarily sinful, but even just material desires, desire of anything separate from Krishna, offenses, all kinds of offenses, the 10 offenses against the holy name specifically. And that's the definition of good sadhana, is really to cultivate the holy name while trying to give up offenses. If one doesn't follow this process, then this anartha nirvritti thing can go on for your whole life and never get through it or past it, or many lifetimes. Yeah. After that, then there's nishtha. One is firm or fixed in devotional service. And Prabhupada was always urging us to become, his expression was, fixed up, get fixed up in Krishna consciousness. This is not really an extremely advanced stage. But once one achieves nishtha, it's rare for somebody to fall down. Anyway, the characteristics of nishtha already are given this in Madhurya Kandamani. Vishnu Chakravarti gives a description of each of these stages. And he says about Nishta means to have the quality of steadiness or naishchalyam, non-movement. Although a person tries for steadiness every day, while the anarthas are still present, he will not attain it. This is due to these five persistent obstacles. Laya, sleep. Vishepa, distraction. Apratipatti, indifference or disinterest in spiritual topics. Kashaya, tendency toward bad habit. And rasavada, taste for material enjoyment. After the stage of anartha nirvritti, when these obstacles are almost completely destroyed, so anartha nirvritti doesn't mean everything is gone. Bhagavatam says when these things are destroyed almost to nil, nasta prayeshu abhadreshu. Nasta means nasta prayeshu. Prayeshu means almost, but not always, but so because there's still further progress. But at this stage, then one achieves steadiness. Thus, the symptoms of nishta is the absence of these five obstacles. So then, what you see right here, the first one, laya, means the tendency to sleep during kirtan, shravanam, hearing, and smaranam, specifically japa, in order of increasing tendency. While people are actually chanting, they don't often fall asleep. Only rarely have I seen somebody giving the class fall asleep, although I have seen it. I walked into a temple room, in fact, and there was a sannyasi who was giving the evening class, and everyone was asleep. It was like one of these fairy tales where you walk in and there's some spell, you know? And he was asleep, and everybody. Is that some enchantment? But sometimes people do fall asleep in kirtan. The hearing is less, and japa, he says, increased tendency. Vishepa means distraction toward mundane topics while doing devotional service. People are doing japa, but then they're walking around, sometimes talking and gossiping, stuff like that. A pratipati refers to the occasional inability to kirtan or other service in spite of the absence of laya or vishepa. Bhaktivinoda Thakur takes these three symptoms and describes them as three forms of pramadaha, of inattentiveness: sleep, distraction, and sort of lack of enthusiasm. Even though you're not distracted, you're not sleepy. Kshaya refers to the innate tendency towards such qualities as anger, greed, and pride. The tendency toward bad habit. Rasavada, taste for material enjoyment, means the inability to absorb the mind in kirtan and other service if one gets the opportunity for material sense pleasure. Nishtita bhakti appears in the absence of these faults. But so that's one. But then the next stage is called ruchi, which is taste, able to actually relish the activities of devotional service. Now, I'll read his description of this. When the devotee takes into his heart the golden medallion of bhakti, shining brightly by the fire of steady practice and propelled by its own energy, then ruchi appears. When a person develops a taste for the activities of bhakti, such as hearing and chanting, vastly greater than attraction for anything else, that is called ruchi. Unlike previous stages, at ruchi, Constant performance of devotional service like hearing and chanting does not cause even the least fatigue. So that's what Prabhupada is talking about. Yeah, this Vishnu Chakra, he didn't make this up. Although it may be beyond our experience, under at least most circumstances, still, this is the sign. Ruchi quickly produces an intense addiction to the activities of bhakti. This is similar to the Brahmana boy who, diligently studying the scriptures daily, in time grasps the meaning, and then finds no difficulty at all in applying himself to study, because now it becomes interesting. Moreover, he takes pleasure in doing his task. The actual conclusion can be understood by the following example. Due to a disease in the liver, the ability to taste becomes affected, and sugar candy becomes distasteful. We've heard this example many times from Prabhupada. Sugar candy, however, is also the medicine to cure the disease. Understanding this, an afflicted person will take sugar candy daily, even if it tastes bitter, and eventually it cures his sickness. And eventually, as it cures his sickness, he will develop a real taste for it. In the same way, the jiva's heart, infected with ignorance and the other kleshas, becomes cured by the medicine of repeatedly hearing, chanting, and other devotional methods. Then eventually he develops a taste for these activities. Then he goes on to mention two stages of ruchi. The lower stage, your taste for devotional activities depends on how well it's done. You have a taste for kirtan, but if people don't know how to play the kartals, or you have a taste for devotional art, but if it's not well executed or kitschy or whatever, you don't like it. So that's the lowest. The higher stage, you don't care. If it's about Krishna, you're into it. And you prefer that better than anything material, no matter how well done. Isn't that amazing? This is ruchi. I always wondered about that, because Prabhupada talks about Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur when he was publishing a journal and people would submit an article. It was his habit to judge the excellence of the article by how many times the name Krishna was mentioned. And I thought, wow, there must have been some really badly written article. I guess somebody, we would never do that in Back to Godhead magazine. But I understood that this is the higher stage of ruchi. That's at least your spontaneous reaction to things. So he says here, a person may only experience pleasure from kirtan if it is pleasing to the ear and artistically sung. He may only relish topics of the Lord if they are delivered skillfully with poetic ornaments and qualities. He may only enjoy deity worship as the place, implements, materials, and so on are according to his fancy. This is called dependence on excellence of elements. It is similar to a person with a weak appetite asking about the variety and quality of preparations in a meal. The cause is a slight impurity in the heart of the devotee. A person with the second type of ruchi will experience great pleasure even from the beginning of any performance of such practices as shravanam and kirtan. If, however, there is excellence of the elements, then he becomes extremely joyful and ecstatic. It means that he has not the slightest trace of impurity in his heart. So anyway, this is the stage where Prabhupada is talking about no fatigue, because this intense relish. And even if somebody's no expert, just like if you're really, really hungry, you'll eat it. you don't worry too much about what's there. I know some people who won't, but it's usually the case. Now I want to read you something that This is the original volume that Prabhupada published in India, right? This is the second volume of Bhagavatam. And the second volume of the first canto, published in 64, has a preface which has not been repeated. And I just want to read this because it shows a couple of things. One is Ruchi, at least, in Srila Prabhupada. Another, his idea of how this discussion of Krishna should be spread all over the world. So he begins the preface with a quotation from the Bhagavatam from the 11th canto. I'll just read his English translation of this. The actual verse is in Devanagari, by the way. It's not transliterated. He says, this is his translation, great sages laboring hard under stringent regulative principles for salvation by suspending simana onwards and thus remaining naked. This is or vareta, you know, where the simana is supposed to go up. As well as successful mendicants who have attained complete satisfaction by purificatory practices do achieve the transcendental sky of the name Brahman. But so far as we are concerned, O the great mystic, we shall transcend this world of abject nescience simply by vibrating the message of your activities as duty-bound devotees of your lordship, although we are moving seemingly on the path of fruitive actions. I love this. In these volumes, you can hear Prabhupada's voice, his real voice. When it becomes edited, unfortunately, you lose a lot of it. You know what they mean by voice? Voice is, you read about all the time now when people are studying writing and stuff. The writers, they try to get you to write with your voice. Because when we speak with each other and we are talking about something that is really interesting to us, you hear a person's voice. That is to say, his way of speaking conveys the person's interest, the person's eagerness, the person's feelings. It's all conveyed. When people sit down to write, most people, it disappears completely. So they're ready to write about Krishna, and then they sit down to write, and they begin. The word God is defined in the Oxford English Dictionary as, you know, the voice is gone. So they try to get people to learn how to when they sit on the page, to get rid of all these inhibitions, to get them to actually be present in their words. It's harder to do in written language. Anyway, here you can really hear Prabhupada's voice. You know, when it's edited, it disappears, and then when he dictated it became a little more difficult. So he has these little things that he did. Oh, the great mystic. Every time Prabhupada heard it was oh this or oh that, he used to say oh the. So they had to edit out the the and so on. So his oh the great mystic. Oh the king. So Prabhupada, after quoting this verse, he writes, the path of fruitive activities, i.e. to say, he says this, i.e. to say, the path of earn money and enjoy life. By the way, these phrases, the earn money, enjoy life, the path of earn money, enjoy life is in boldface. He put various things in boldface type. The path of fruitive activity, i.e. to say, the path of earn money and enjoy life, as it is going on generally, appears to have become also our profession, although we have renounced the order of worldly life! They see that we are moving in the cities, in the government offices, banks, and other business places for promoting the publication of Srimad Bhagavatam. They also see that we are moving in the press, paper market and amongst the bookbinders and also away from our residence in Vrindavan, and thus they conclude sometimes mistakenly that we are also doing the same business in the dress of a mendicant. Exclamation point. But actually, there's a gulf of difference between the two kinds of activities. This is not a business for maintaining an establishment of material enjoyment. On the contrary, it is an humble attempt to broadcast the glories of the Lord at a time when the people need it very badly. An unbeliever friend became astonished to learn that we have taken up a mighty project for presenting 60 volumes of 400 pages each simply for the matter of glorifying the Lord. But we should not forget to remember that the Lord is unlimited. This material world is a fragmental portion of His unfathomable glories, out of which this tiny earth is a particle only. And on the surface of the earth there are numberless cities, and in each and every one of them there are hundreds of printing houses, all engaged in the matter of broadcasting the message of this limited space. We can just imagine how many hundreds of thousands of volumes we may need to glorify the activities of the unlimited Lord. Therefore, 60 volumes of Srimad Bhagavatam are just the sample distribution of His glories presented in a manner understandable by the stagnant brain of the residents of this insignificant globe. Otherwise, the residents of higher planets who have got superior brains than the man do go through thousands and millions of volumes of Srimad Bhagavatam to know about the glories of the Lord. Formerly, even 50 years before, rich and well-to-do members of the society used to get Srimad Bhagavatam imprinted or handwritten along with authoritative commentaries by learned pundits and then distribute them amongst the devotees of the Lord specially and the people in general casually. At the present moment, the time is so changed that we had to request one of the biggest industrialists of India to purchase 100, that is the numeral 100, and then in parentheses, in letters, 100, copies, and distribute them, but the poor fellow expressed his inability. We wished that somebody may come forward to pay for the actual cost of publication of the Srimad Bhagavatam and let them be distributed free to all the leading gentlemen of the world, but nobody is so far prepared to do this social uplifting work. Of course, we are grateful to the Ministry of Education, Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and in the central government of India for purchasing some copies and then distribute them to the great institution, universities, etc., both in India and abroad. The Director of Education has also recommended this publication as library copies in educational institutions, and they are also purchasing the copies. The problem is that we must get some money for completing the work, which is admittedly a mighty project. The sales proceeds are being employed in the promotional work and not in sense gratification. Herein lies the difference from the fruitive activities. And for all this, we have to approach everyone concerned just like a businessman. There's no harm to become a businessman if it is done on account of the Lord, as much as there was no harm to become a violent warrior like Arjuna or Hanumanji if such belligerent activities are executed to satisfy the desires of the Supreme Lord. So even though we are not in the Himalayas, even though we talk of business, even though we deal in rupees and pice, still, simply because we are 100% servants of the Lord and engaged in the service of broadcasting the message of His glories, certainly we shall transcend and get through the invincible impasse of Maya and reach the effulgent kingdom of God to render Him face to face eternal service in full bliss and knowledge. We are confident of this factual position, and we may also assure to our numerous readers that they will also achieve the same result simply by hearing the glories of the Lord. Janama Shuti Mantrena Pumam Bhavati Nirbala. As we belong to the chain of the Siddha succession from Prahlad Maharaj, we may try to follow his footprints. He said before his Lord Nrisimhadeva as follows, "My Lord, generally all the munis, saints and philosophers are interested in their personal salvation. They are mostly silent and travel in lonely places without any desire for others' benefit. But I am not like them." And this in boldface. "I do not wish to go to the kingdom of God alone, leaving this poor misguided people in general who have no other alternative than to surrender to you, and this I see by my practical experience. We are more interested, therefore, in the mission of reclaiming the conditioned souls for the kingdom of God by all means than to seek our personal salvation performed rigidly in a secluded place." That's Prabhupada's statement. Huh? Obviously, he was being criticized. And so his reply to his critics there. You can see, you can feel Prabhupada's commitment and enthusiasm for spreading Srimad Bhagavatam. And he says, this wonderful part where he says, here's this world which is just like a little speck in creation, and the printing presses are roaring nights and days just to broadcast the news of this little space. So then how much more do we need to glorify the unlimited Lord? Why anything astonishing? So this is anyway, you see the energy here that Prabhupada has. We have to get that energy in Krishna consciousness. So the statement that Prabhupada makes here about no fatigue and being eager for more no matter how much you do is a correct statement. Any questions or comments? Huh?
The two different stages of mercy depend upon whether the person likes the...
Whether it's well done, whether the devotional activity is well performed, or whether it's not so expert. So you see these things, right? I mean, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates would honor prasadam, they would never comment about it. They never discussed anything, but especially they would never say anything at all about it. Only, 3 weeks later would somebody finally point out, there was too much salt or something like that, because it was prasadam. And then when Raghunath Das Goswami came to Jagannath Puri, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was wondering, where is he? As he just, he was such a rich person. His family was enormously wealthy. Came from a family of tax collectors and landowners and so on. He was really rich. And he just became completely renounced. And he said, well, he's out behind the Jagannath temple. They didn't see him begging, even where the sadhus would sit at the gate and beg for food. Jagannath Prasad, he wasn't even there. How is he eating? He's worried. He was behind the temple. Because when the prasadam would get so old that nobody would take it, they would pile it up and back somewhere for the animals to come and eat it. And then Raghunath Das came, and he would take even the stuff that the animals wouldn't take. He'd take it and he'd wash it, and that's what he was living on. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very really attracted by this. So he came to Raghunath Das Goswami while he was there eating, and he says, "So I hear you're having a feast and you haven't invited me." So that's it was a feast. Yeah.
Actually, about an option you discussed today, very important for us, who are actually performing the devotional service and chanting, maintaining sacred principles. And it's called actually, after many years, maybe I have had like nice description from you. So sometimes I think so better discuss more about, especially about Anatta. You told that materiality is there, and during, when we are chanting, we are sometimes hearing, when we are hearing Bhagavad, when we are sleeping. So, till Galtin, so, he said, can you describe a little more if I actually hear about Anatta?
About the Anatta?
Anatta.
Yeah. Well, Anatta ultimately means when he talked, he's basing his discussion on the second chapter of the first canto of Bhagavatam, Nasta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Abhadra. Those Abhadra, inauspicious things that are in the heart of a devotee. Because the previous verse mentions these, by hearing and chanting, these things go away. I can't remember exactly how the verse goes, but then nasta prayeshu abhadreshu, these inauspicious things are almost totally destroyed. Nityam bhagavata sevaya. So this means regularly. Nitya means what you do as on a fixed and regular basis. Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, if the Bhagavata means the book Bhagavatam, or Bhagavata Seva, serving the spiritual master and the pure devotees. Then when that happens, then these things are disappeared, and then what? Naishti Bhavatipa. Then they're naistiki. This is nishta. This nishta appears. So there's a very long discussion in here about these things. And then you find the quotation here. The first verse. Shrinvatam Swakata Krishna Punya Sravana Kirtana. They're punya to hear the Krishna Kata. Punya has power, pious power. Vidyantasto Hyabhadrani Siddha Antashto. Those dirty things, the inauspicious things, they are situated in the heart. Vidunoti Suritsitam. They are just Nasta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavat Yuttama Shloki Bhakti Bhavati Naistiki. Then when that nicety takes place, then tata rajas tamo bhava kama loba dayaschaye. So there it mentions those things go away. Tama and raja, mode of passion, mode of ignorance, those symptoms. And kama, loba, and so on. Lust, greed, anger, avarice. Cheta etar anavidhim stittam satte prasidati. Then the devotee is established in goodness and he becomes completely happy. Here are tangible symptoms of advancing in Krishna consciousness, you should see. Now there's a whole long description here, which I do not have time to get into this, of the different kinds of anarthas and the different how far they go at different stages. Some anarthas are the things that are anarthas that arise from sins, and also the anarthas that arise from piety, your past karma, both your past sins and your past karma. Then anarthas from aparad, nam aparad, mainly. The seva aparad, in deity worship, but if we are chanting, then those are mitigated, and then you have to just worry about, he explains this, nam aparad. That's why we study this nam aparad, which also includes Vaishnava aparad, Guru aparad, Sadhu Ninda, and then there's a whole description of those also. Then there's another anartha. The anartha is arising from bhakti. Can bhakti produce anarthas? He explains. As many weeds grow along with the name plant, along with bhakti, appear wealth and other facilities, worship and respect by others, and a comfortable position and fame. Labha, puja, pratishta. These are mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita. When you weed the bhakti lata, when you water the bhakti lata bija, not only is the plant watered, but also weeds are watered, and they come up. These weeds grow powerful and overwhelm the heart of the devotee with their influences, retarding the growth of the main plant intended for cultivation, bhakti. And even Prabhupada warns in this commentary there, this purport to that verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that there is a weed that looks just like the bhakti lata, and it grows very, very close to it. So it is very sometimes difficult to discriminate. So, huh? Well, you know, look how many disciples he has. Now, how many? I must be an advanced devotee. So many people are worshiping. So many disciples are there. So much money is coming. Oh, Krishna must really be pleased with me. Oh, I'm so famous all over the world, for example. That's what he means, these kind of things. Kutinati, he lists other things, duplicitous behavior, being two-faced, and so on. Yeah. So sometimes one can think that somebody's a very, very advanced devotee, and yet be mistaken. Even one can think oneself an advanced devotee and be mistaken. We've seen this.
Well, I think if one thinks of himself as an advanced devotee, can't be mistaken.
Yeah, but he doesn't think, you know, you have a clever way to think that you're an advanced devotee without thinking I'm an advanced devotee. But in my heart, there's a secret desire, a secret idea. Yeah. Yeah. What, do you want to say something?
Yeah.
Anyway, so there's a whole discussion how they are destroyed. I mean, I've given like some seminars. I spent several days on this matter, you know. But the essential thing is that one has to chant the holy name while trying to become free from offenses. This, at least, what's manifest is namabhasa. If we're committing offenses and not doing anything about it, then this is namaparad, and you can go on chanting for millions of years. We say every morning, you know, this is namaparad. No, the potency of the name is not manifest. But if there's namabhas, which is not the pure name, which is the dawning light of the holy name, as when the sun is below the horizon, but the sunlight is in the sky. That dawning light, that's what destroys all the anarthas. Simply by trying to become free. I'm worried, oh, am I committing? There's some people that are so afraid of committing Vaishnava aparadha. They won't criticize anybody unless they have to for some reason. Otherwise, they don't want to say anything bad about anybody. They're just afraid of this. Well, there are other people who go on the internet every day and they think Vaishnava aparadha is their service to God. I mean, you have this range of people. That's another topic. Don't worry about it. You shouldn't worry about that part. You should worry about committing Vaishnava aparadha.
Doesn't it lend itself to certain abuse?
You have to be careful. I'm saying that those people who are in a position, you have to correct things that go on. That's also my duty. So if I have a duty to correct things that are going wrong, then I have to also do that duty. At the same time, I have to be careful, even while doing that duty, to avoid Vaishnava aparad. So that's sometimes difficult to do. That's a whole other topic. Anyway, if as long as one is chanting on the clearing stage, trying to give up offenses, then Haridas Thakur says that destroys all sinful reaction and gives liberation. This namabas gives liberation. The Shuddha Nam, the pure name, gives prema. Is even higher. So the main thing is that one has to chant the holy name while trying to give up offenses. Then the potency of the holy name will be there, and one will get through this stage of anartha nivritti. Why spend 50 years at it? It can be that how quickly it's done depends upon the application of the devotee. And if Krishna sees that one is sincerely trying, then he'll make all the arrangements. Oh, I need good association. Well, he'll give you good association. Why should Krishna send us good association if I'm just going to sit there going, anyway? But if I'm ready to take advantage of it, then yeah, he'll send it.
What are the advantages that arise from piety?
Desire for heavenly sense gratification, heavenly enjoyment. As I recall, I can check and see. Yeah, the attachments they're basically swarga. Anartha means things you do not want. Artha is a valuable thing. Anartha, what you don't want. So we are trying to clean the heart. So what's in the way that stands in my obstacles to devotional service? That's what I don't want. Material attachments of all kinds. Lust, greed, anger, envy, spite, desire for revenge. I mean, whatever all those things that are in there. Those are all unwanted things. Then there are the other things. Disobeying the order of the spiritual master, blaspheming the Vedic literature, the list we say in the morning of the 10 offenses against the holy name, they're committing those offenses. Those are also anarthas. The desire for profit, adoration, and distinction, those are anarthas.
So all offenses are anarthas, but not necessarily all anarthas are offenses.
Yeah, because some are sins. I mean, any sin is an offense, but not all offenses are sins. And some are sinful desires. That's not an offense, but it's an anartha. Yeah. Okay? We better stop. It's getting late. I got to go to Baltimore this morning. You were looking for... Oh, I was looking for something. Right. Yeah, I just make... He asked about the piety. Okay, here we go. Anarthas arising from pious work are the desire for the enjoyments that arise from pious action and the desire for liberation. I forgot that part.
Yeah. But then that's kind of necessary if you're undergoing the spiritual progress.
Yeah, but as you become free from anarthas, you'll also lose the desire for liberation. Then you have something much better. And the liberation, that happens automatically. You don't have to worry about it. But in the beginning, yes, one should desire to become free from suffering in this material world. But at a certain point, that's good. But at a certain point, sometimes the good becomes the enemy of the best.
That sounds poetic. It sounds like we got that from somewhere.
I made it up, but then I found out that that attitude is condemned as overly scrupulous.
Thank you.